Today, our guest speaker is Kate Lovelady. She is the St. Louis Ethical Society leader and previous guest at ESMR. Kate was born and raised in New York City, went to college at Northwestern University, and worked in New York and North Carolina. She attended the American Ethical Union Lay Leadership Summer School in 2000 and was accepted for professional leadership training by the AEU in 2001. After this, she became an Ethical Society leader intern and was certified as a officiant leader by the AEU in September 2005, the same year she came to St. Louis, where she's been the leader ever since. And while she's been on sabbatical for a little while, she starts back at work there tomorrow, she told me.
Wow. All good things come to
end. So Kate's talk is titled The Ethical Society versus NPR. She will talk about why community is important and where we find hope and joy with so much overwhelming negativity all around us. After Kate's talk, there will be time for some questions from the floor, as well as time for additional conversation with her during our potluck lunch, which she's staying for as well. So a big welcome for Kate Lovelady.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here and to see you all and to talk with you. And yeah, I've been on sabbatical since May and then on vacation, so I'm not sure I really remember how to do this. We'll see how it goes. Today is officially my last day of vacation, so I'm vacationing with you. I'm wearing my vacationing shoes. So it's been very casual. And I'm glad to be here. So one of the things that I do each year at the Ethical Society of St. Louis is that I give a Ethical Society versus something else talk. There's a bunch of these online if you're interested, or I can give you like a one-minute version of them if we have time. But the idea is to kind of look at how we are similar to and different from different kinds of traditions or ideas or practices, such as secular humanism or Buddhism or Unitarianism or things like that. But what I wanted to do today in this talk, which is also online, so if you've already heard it, you can just go start eating already. although it has changed a bit. But I wanted to look at a different sort of practice, not necessarily another tradition or another religion or another philosophy, but maybe the most rapidly growing practice in America, particularly among people who have a sort of liberal religious or liberal philosophical outlook, such as people who tend to come to ethical societies. And this is the somewhat newly common practice of not belonging to any established group or tradition or religion or philosophy community, but rather the habit of spending Sunday morning at home in one's jammies listening to NPR. And I realize that not everyone in the demographic that I'm going to be talking about actually listens to NPR. Some people might read the paper or go out to brunch or listen to KDHX or watch one of those TV news programs where people yell at each other, or any number of things. But I'm kind of using NPR as my general metaphor for the many people today who might have much in common with Ethical Society members and attendees, but who consider themselves non-joiners and don't generally join us and would prefer to kind of be at home, and why that is. Now, Felix Adler, who founded the first Ethical Society along with a bunch of other people, he gave the founding address for the first Ethical Society in 1876. And the very first sentence of the founding address is this: "For a long time, the conviction has been dimly felt in the community that, without prejudice to existing institutions, the legal day of weekly rest might be employed to advantage for purposes affecting the general good." Which is a fancy way of saying, people are wasting their Sundays. That's a very sort of polite 19th century way of saying that. but it's actually a very daring statement. Adler was daring to criticize congregational attendance, which was what most people did on Sundays at that time, and not just Christians, because Adler's roots were in Reform Judaism, and at that time, Reform congregations, many of them also met on Sundays, because a lot of people worked 6 days a week. The labor movement had not yet given us the weekend, so Sunday was the day to go and hear about being good. Adler then suggesting that Sundays might be better used by people was pointing out that all this church and synagogue going did not really seem to be influencing society at large to become kinder and fairer. And in fact, he saw the opposite happening. This was not that long after the American Civil War, and in the middle of, or the beginning of, the onset of the Industrial Revolution, and the widespread abuse of workers, including child labor and all kinds of stuff. So he was thinking about how Sundays might be differently used. And I think people today are still asking that same question. Sort of, what is the purpose of why I might go somewhere? Why should I do one thing rather than another? When I was on sabbatical, both this time and when I had a sabbatical a few years ago, I occasionally dropped into other religion services on Sunday just to see what they were like and how they operated as an organization. But most of the time, what I did on Sunday was I read the newspaper, I listened to the radio, I went out to brunch. It was very exciting to have Sunday brunch. The way that many millions of people spend their Sundays today, not in a community. And those Sundays were pleasant, I have to say. They were nice. NPR Sunday mornings are nice. But one of the many reasons that I came back from sabbatical originally, and I'm going to be coming back tomorrow, why I'm still doing this work, is because of Adler's words and that question, and my experience that ethical society Sundays do actually affect the general good, much more than my NPR Sundays. And that this effect is worth the inconvenience of putting on clothes and getting myself somewhere at a particular time. If we're honest, though, often what we talk about at ethical societies is not that different than what you might read in the New York Times or what you might hear on NPR. So what are the significant differences between an ethical society Sunday and what I'm going to call an NPR Sunday? One of the primary issues when I think about this is related to the problem of what's called infotainment. And that is information that we find interesting, but that which is more a form of entertainment than a source of knowledge. Entertainment is not necessarily a bad thing. It's fine to be entertained, but entertainment is sort of a stimulating but fleeting experience versus information or knowledge, which is something that we take in that becomes relevant to our lives, that is hopefully also stimulating and entertaining in a way, or interesting, rather. But in addition to being interesting, it connects deeply with us. It adds on to our long-term knowledge. It helps our growth as people. It helps our growth in wisdom. It's a more relevant kind of information, knowledge that changes us. It provides pathways and motivation for us to take action. Action, hopefully, to change our lives and our wider communities for the better. So knowledge versus infotainment. Infotainment is generally talked about in connection with media, but I think infotainment is also often a problem in congregations, and it is an issue in ethical societies that we also need to be aware of. When we're deciding sort of what programs or speakers or classes or activities to develop and support, we want to think through the purposes of the information that we're going to be sharing or the activities that we're going to be doing, and whether something is merely just sort of interesting, I didn't know that, or whether we're using it as a potential source of ethical transformation. Because I think that's why we're here, why we're alive, is to be ethically transformed in some level. People who research religions in America say that one of the reasons that so many mainstream liberal churches are shrinking so rapidly is because their members don't feel much of a difference between the infotainment that they get in church and the infotainment that they get from the internet or radio or TV. Basically, it's the same stuff. Why does it matter? Why should I put on clothes and go to a place on Sunday morning for that? In my experience, I think ethical societies try really hard to avoid that infotainment trap by constantly trying to make connections between information so that we are deepening our knowledge and our wisdom, and by constantly trying to find ways to turn knowledge into motivation and into practices to live more ethically. I know when we have people come speak to us, one of the things we always ask them to think about is, why does this matter and what should we do about it? Not just, huh, that's interesting. And how do we support each other? How do we support ourselves in making more ethical choices? What does this information mean about how I should live my life? But I feel like the infotainment trap in everyday life is growing, so I really want to examine this trap in depth this morning with you, and I look forward to hearing from you about it as well, because it is something that I am struggling with in my daily life and continue to struggle more and more with. One way I find that even information that I think is important and stuff that I should know, it somehow I feel like it's still becoming infotainment is just by sheer volume of information. And this is a problem that I personally have when I listen to too much NPR or when I consume lots of other news and information. And I can feel it becoming a compulsion. And I think many of us are becoming compulsive news junkies. And I think, ironically, the more anxious we are about the state of politics, and many of us have been more anxious about it lately, non-denominationally speaking, the more compulsively then we check for new information. So one of my questions is, how many of you kind of get news updates, whether it's through the radio or TV or Facebook or Twitter, several times a day or more? Yeah, pretty much everybody. How often is there vital news that changes that often? Vital news, not just like, oh, somebody else said something about this. Vital news meaning actual activity, and not just someone shooting off a tweet. Not that often. I kind of think about it like opening the refrigerator. You know, you keep opening the refrigerator thinking that something new is going to be in there. That's kind of what checking in on the news feels like to me often. And we know this because if you've been on vacation or you've gone camping or you've been sick or there's something in your life that happened where you had not been able to check in on the news for several days or sometimes even several weeks, it's always shocking how, like, it's pretty much the same.
Right.
Every once in a while, like, oh, okay, we declared war on X. That's new. But more often than not, you really feel like, well, I didn't miss anything, you know. And even I find, because I do try to turn off a little bit during the summer at least, and not only do I find that not that much has changed, but if there is new stuff, the fact that I'm learning about it a week or two later doesn't matter at all. It doesn't affect my life or anyone else. And in fact, sometimes it's better because the beginning of it is usually like, well, what we've been saying for the last week or two turned out to be completely wrong. And so now this is the truth. So I missed all that. So it's kind of better. People talk about this today and they blame, you know, cable news, they blame the 24-hour news cycle, they blame the internet. But those of you who've read Walden, which I'm sure many of you have, could remember that in 1854 he talked about this. And he talked about how people were obsessed with news. He has this description where he pokes fun at the person who is addicted to reading the newspaper every day. And Thoreau says, after a night's sleep, he believes the news is as indispensable as the breakfast. Pray, tell me anything new that has happened to a man anywhere on this globe. And he reads it over his coffee and rolls. That a man has had his eyes gouged out this morning on the Wachito River, never dreaming the while that he lives in the dark, unfathomed mammoth cave of this world and has but the rudiment of an eye himself. So basically, I think looking at the difference between information and knowledge, that we can get a lot of information and still not necessarily have much knowledge or wisdom. Many philosophers have suggested that we would be better off learning more about ourselves and less about things that we have no control over or that are merely sensational or even merely interesting. And I have been thinking about this phrase, mind your own business. And it's usually used as a way of telling someone, like, kiss off, right? Like, mind your own business. But it is actually really good advice. Mind, I think, implies to me both mindfulness, since I'm very interested in mindful meditation, and taking care of what we mind is what we take care of. So what if we did mind our own business? What if we were more mindful? What if we took better care of our own attitudes and actions and relationships and the circle of influence that we actually have? What would that look like? Maybe we would make more significant progress toward ethical living. So I'm trying to do this thing where before I check the news for like the umpteenth time in a day, I'm saying, Kate, mind your own business. I think that it's great that since the 2016 election, many people have decided to become more educated about and involved in politics. And I don't want anything that I'm saying to be taken as, well, we should just stick our heads in the sand. But I don't think that we need to be addicted to news in order to be educated and effective. And in fact, I think too much compulsive news reading is counterproductive. I find that sometimes new information helps me to mind my own business, but more often, too much new information just distracts me, or it lengthens the list of things that could potentially be my business until that list has become so long that my motivation just gives up and sort of my brain goes out of business and I just don't want to do anything. People talk about hitting the brain limit of information overload, or sort of the heart limit of compassion fatigue, which is when we hear so many bad things about so many things happening to people, suffering everywhere in all these different ways, that we just become emotionally exhausted and we can't really respond to anything. It seems heartless on the one hand not to be interested in the suffering of any being, but if the point of learning about suffering is to become motivated to do something about it, then actually I think limiting the amount of suffering that we learn about may be more compassionate, because such limits will help us focus on the work that we can do and that we are doing. At least that is how I experience it. Maybe you have a limitless ability to be compassionate and motivated and active, and I know that there are people like that. But I think a lot of us are not quite like that. We talk about following the news, and we mean paying attention to it. But often we end up more literally following the news, kind of like, you know, a stick that's been thrown to a dog. We have a new dog, so all my metaphors now are dog related. We are following the news in that we're making decisions of what is deserving of our time and attention based on the media, on what our friends are sharing online, which is often years old too. And I get all upset about stuff that turns out then to be wrong or to have been 6 years old. Or, of course, on the latest tweets that we are running after. So if we're mostly following the news, then our heads get so cluttered with these random collections of unconnected ideas, most of which we really don't have the time or the true interest to explore in depth, that it's very hard, I think, to gain real knowledge and wisdom. Instead, when we follow the news, we end up with, I think, this information pool in our heads that is sort of a mile wide but an inch deep. And it's not even really a pool, it's sort of like a series of rivulets that go off in different directions. most real knowledge and real wisdom begins from a big picture. A series of important questions that we ask ourselves about life and ourselves and each other and what we want those things to be like. Goals, big goals, hopes, a picture of what we want the future to look like, and an understanding of whose lives we want to affect and how. How we want tomorrow to be different from today, next year to be different from this year. These are big pictures that can guide us towards seeking the information and the experiences that will move us closer to our goals. It's a sort of very planful activity, actually, to, I think, really go after knowledge and wisdom. And as I said, of course, some news and even entertainment might help us toward our goals, to clarifying that big picture and trying to go after it. But I don't think that we should allow the news and entertainment media to set our agenda for us and to shape our learning. And I think that's what we're doing when we are spending more of our time with NPR or news magazines or our Facebook feed or the media's insistence on reporting every single tweet that comes out of the White House. I think that we should just stop paying any attention to those. If we want to make progress, we need to set our own agendas based on our most important values. Yet another possible problem with this infotainment and our addiction to news media is that we don't have the time to really create that big picture and clarify those values when we're so distracted. We don't have time to reflect and digest and make connections and check other sources. This, of course, is, you know, very well known. If you're on Facebook or some other thing where people are forwarding things all the time, if you take one day in which you check everything that your friends have forwarded to you, and you know at least 60% of it is wrong. Well-meaning, but wrong. There are more and more news outlets that are embarrassing themselves by jumping to the wrong conclusions, and it's all in the name of, you know, getting the story first, right? Being able to say something first. And we have this actually in our own movement. We talk about how important it is that, you know, leaders should get out a statement right away, or the AEU should get out a statement right away. And I'm not sure that that's always such a good idea. Not only is everybody else making a statement right away, but I think we often don't know what the hell we're talking about when we say stuff right away. I usually go back a few days later and say, I'm not sure about that. So again, I mean, except for things like tornado warnings, I think it's irrelevant whether we learn most news within the hour or the day or even the week when it occurs. It's much more important that we learn the correct information. And another problem with this is not just that we're distracted, but of course there's lots of studies that show if you hear something, even if somebody tells you later that it's wrong, it's still in your head. You know, attorneys know this when they're like, oh, I pay no attention to what that just happened in the courtroom. Like, yeah, they're human. A final concern that I have with consuming too much news and information is that because it leads to our personal and ethical agendas being set by very large media organizations, and I don't mean this in sort of a paranoid way, I just mean that's what they're presenting, that we usually then lack the knowledge and motivation to act locally. We're supposed to think global and act local, right? But large media organizations, for practical reasons, put most of their resources into global and national reporting, and fewer local places have the money even to do good local reporting. NPR in St. Louis provides 1 hour of local information a day. Actually, 2 hours, but it's a repeat of the same hour. And, you know, maybe you'll get 2-minute local headlines now and then. And many people that I know listen to NPR all day long. And most of us know much more about national politics and issues than we do about local ones. although local ones often have a greater impact on our life and on other people's lives. Many vital issues that sound very big and are very big, inequality and healthcare access and the death penalty and crime and safety and ethical policing and sentencing and LGBT rights and land and water use, pollution and education and reproductive rights and health and homelessness and poverty, so many big ethical issues are governed in large measure by state and local laws and regulations. And in an era when so many people feel disempowered and even depressed about our seeming helplessness to kind of move the needle and improve things, I think it's ironic and really sad that we pay so much more attention to national and international news than we do to local and state politics. Because it's much easier for individuals and small groups to make an impact on the local and the state level. And maybe we'd feel less helpless if we spent more time learning about our own communities and what we can do here, and less about things that we really can't do that much about. So we don't want lives, I think, in which we're buried in infotainment and feel disconnected and anxious and helpless. We want to feel connected. We want to feel motivated. We want to feel hopeful. We want to feel that we have some power. What then is a real source of connection and power and knowledge? And I think that that is community. In a way, NPR listeners are a kind of community, and I know they say that when they're raising money, and I believe it. But I think that real community has a lot more to offer people. For instance, I love to listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, yeah.
Makes me very happy. I love all the panelists. I kind of feel like some of them are my family. I'm totally in love with Paula Poundstone. And I bet that most of them are truly very friendly people. But when I am tempted to stay home and hang with them rather than engage in real community, I need to remember that they're not my friends. They're not going to show up and help me through a crisis. They're not going to celebrate with me. They make me laugh, and that's great, but they're not going to explore the big questions of life with me, or help me clarify my values, or even share a good vegetarian recipe with me. They're not going to go to a protest with me. You're not going to bring up your kids with Krista Tippett's kids, if she even has kids, or to widen the media reference. You know, you're not going to face the challenges of aging together with Rachel Maddow. Being a part of a real community can do so much more for us than consuming infotainment does. And an ethical community can turn what might otherwise be mere infotainment into ethical knowledge and wisdom. When you learn about an ethical issue here at Mid Rivers, you are not just listening to the radio. You're learning while surrounded by other people that you can reflect on with, what you've learned, that you can share specific parts of your life that may be connected to. You can add from your knowledge, you can argue with the speaker. You can figure out if and how to respond to things that are important to you. You can work together to find out how to take action. You're surrounded by people who can support you in keeping your ethical commitments if something inspires you and motivates you. I listen to stuff all the time, or I read stuff, and I'm like, I should totally do something about that. Or, you know what, I'm not going to do X, Y, and Z anymore. And I keep so few of those commitments. It's embarrassing. Being in a community and sharing those kind of commitments with other people is a very different matter. People who can help you live up to your best self. And, you know, say it's okay when you don't, and support you in trying again. When you hear about an ethical issue on NPR versus here, you probably just feel guilty or sad, or you think, you know, well, somebody should do something about that. And then the next segment comes along and you feel kind of the same way. And that seems to me very different than when you're here with each other, learning together. So these are some of the reasons why I started going to an ethical society in the first place on Sundays instead of staying home and listening to NPR, and why I still do. And I hope that you will think about your reasons for being here, talk about them over the potluck, particularly for those Sundays when you need a little extra motivation to get you or your kids out of the door in the morning. And when you're talking to other NPR Sunday type friends about why they should come with you to check out the Ethical Society. You can also point out that NPR on Sundays is mostly a repeat of NPR on Saturdays, so they're really not going to be missing anything. I look forward to hearing your thoughts now, if we have time, and certainly over lunch. Thanks.
Thank you.
I forget what happens now. Do I sit down?
No,
okay, you're fine.
Stay up.
Questions?
Yeah.
Questions, comments, suggestions, criticisms, everything.
So, as you're talking, it really makes me think about the nature of an ethical society. Of course, we're always fighting being small, but the fact that we are small and we have to build it ourselves, it's akin to listening to music as opposed to learning an instrument and making music. You have to create it yourself. And it, because we're small, it forces a local perspective, because we can only bring in local speakers. And so it forces an exploration of what's happening of an ethical nature locally.
Yeah, I first found a joint an ethical society in North Carolina, which was about this size. And now working at a really big one, I love both, and they're both very different. A big group gives you a lot of resources, but yeah, a small group gives you a lot of you do have to do things yourself, and I think that that's important. And I think if I had not started out in a small society, I would not be a leader right now. If I had started out in a big society, I'd be like, well, that's nice. I'm going to come here and listen to that. So I don't want to say don't grow, because growing is great and will give you lots of different opportunities, but I also never like it when groups are like, well, we're small. I'm like, well, good, because that's got lots of good things too. Yes.
Oh, me?
Yes, you, Beth. Sorry.
Me?
Yes.
I just wanted to share that I just keep NPR station on my radio in the car, and it's always on. And on the go with a lot. So that's when I hear it. But on Sunday morning, in the house, I don't turn it on. But I'm going to be here in the Sunday morning, then I'm going to be here.
I hope you don't get road rage either from listening. I know several people who listen to the music now in the car specifically for that.
I'm really into what I'm hearing on NPR, and that helps.
Thanks, Beth.
And I never do that.
You just did that to me. I won't take that personally.
Like, I'm not going fast enough, are you? Like that to myself, but then I go, Beth,
thanks, Beth. Okay. Bill?
One of the things that I've tried to really enjoyed your talk.
Oh, thanks.
Is to distinguish between what is fact and what is a subjective opinion.
Right.
And I think that when I listen to media or read articles of any kind, I kind of look at that as like 95% opinion and maybe 5% fact.
Right.
So that's when we are talking about the overload of information, that's kind of where I think that.
Yeah, and that could be exciting too. It's like, oh, what are people saying about this? But we want to know that. I guess that's kind of a natural social thing. But I think that's also a time where I'm trying to say, like, I should be minding my own business, because, yeah, it's just a lot of this. Other thoughts? I'm particularly interested if anyone has been trying sort of to change their own habits. But anything.
Well, frozen and stuck since Trump was elected, and
I'm not, I feel like in some ways I'm not really having to really live in my own life. Yet I'm kind of new here. And the other thing I wanted to say is I really appreciate how friendly and welcoming that this group is. So I really enjoyed your talk because I'm aware that I'm stuck, but breaking out of it has been difficult.
Yeah. And having other people to talk to about it, I think, makes a big difference. And I'm glad you all are friendly and welcoming. Thumbs up.
To your point of, you know, contemplating what I could do and thoughts on that, in listening to your talk, that's exactly what you put the idea in my head for, or, you know, about, which is, hey, yeah, there's all this high-level, nationwide, worldwide stuff, and that's important, but what is it important in my life as a whole, and how do I reach that, you know, how I better things in areas I can control? Just anything. It could be politics, it could be children, it could be
volunteering,
with all sorts of things, but those do make a difference. Will the whole world know you did it, and that make a difference worldwide? No, but at least you've done your
I think that's really important, though, to think about it that way, because, and I have to say, even though some of the stuff that I've said is like, oh yeah, everybody says that, there's part of me that is kind of ashamed, because if there's a sin in ethical humanism, it is not to know something, right? Or not to be interested in a piece of information. But I think trying to figure out what our goals are is different. Yes.
I'm just going to say, special feeding regimens. But that means there's one less cat out there that somebody else won't have to take care of and won't have to worry about. You know, the shelter itself won't have to worry about the money, where that money is coming from, because now I have that cat and I'm going to take care of it. And somebody else can take a different cat. And that's, you know, that cat, you know. And that cat also isn't, and this is kind of a crazy tangent, that cat isn't out on the street killing birds, which are hurting, because they're killing off the natural species of different areas. Like, cats kill off actual bird populations.
That's a great example of the sort of ripple effect. Yeah.
I know, I've got the cat that loves me, and it doesn't really matter, because, you know.
Yeah, I guess I should make a public confession. I was an abuse junkie, and it was very hard to break the habit. Actually, I think it helped to move here, because it was sort of in the center of news for a while. And, you know, it was like, I'd get up in the morning and I'd have to, oh my God, what did the buffoon do last night? Is the West Coast still there? And you just start and watch news programs and you read a couple of newspapers. And I think one thing is very good to remove yourself from a lot of it. And I would cut myself back to one newspaper a day and 2 hours of news, which is very difficult. But you feel like a calmness kind of come over you that, okay, I guess, you know, the coast will last for a while, things like that. And but it's difficult once you're plugged into that, and it kind of generates itself, you know, that what happened, but what happened then, and who said this, and who said that. And so it was very good move.
Yeah. Was there a hand over here first, Patty?
I record, I don't watch live TV. I record anything I think I'm going to watch. And I was going through my list of recordings, which is very long. And I was saying, like, Barney Joe, and then something else, and then Rachel, and then Lawrence. But something caught me the other day, and I'm not going to do that anymore, thank you. because it is like being addicted. Like, oh, I better go watch something I've recorded.
Right. Right.
But yesterday, I think it was yesterday when the two people died in Marriott, in the Marriott River.
Oh, I don't know.
The day before.
Yes, it was.
I found myself checking St. Louis News because they hadn't found their bodies yet. And I was so, it was a woman and a child. And I just kept going back and looking at the news. And finally, at 10 o'clock last night, they identified them. But I watched the 6 o'clock news, 6 o'clock news, the 10 o'clock news, because I was just stuck on worrying about those people. You know, it didn't do any good. It didn't help find them. It didn't help their family.
No,
there was nothing there that I did except obsess over finding that out. You know, and you pointed that out so well.
I think it's so interesting, though. There's something in there why we do that. I assume it's some kind of psychological, like, false control thing, mm-hmm. you know, that we think knowing gives us control over something. Do we have time for one more?
Yep.
Andy?
Well, I have a confession to make also that I guess certain writers, certain not really newscasts, I do most of my news reading on the internet, but I subscribe to the Washington Post online. And there were times, and I love reading Jennifer Rubin. She's a conservative, but she can't stand Trump. And her columns are endless diatribes against Trump. And she puts out about maybe 4 or 5 a day. And I just it's like, but I get overloaded. You know, it's like. Another thing I disagree with Eastern General Rutherford. And sometimes I just said to myself, I've got to stop doing this. I've got to read something else. Because it's just like one thing after another. But it's kind of like myself. It's an addiction. You know, you just feel so frustrated. And you want to hear something bashing the guy. And I know if I read one of her columns, it's going to satisfy that. But it is an addiction. And how do you break an addiction like that? It's hard. It's very hard.
I'm glad that you guys are working on this together so you can support each other. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.